Hi, everybody. Geraldo here. Welcome to Geraldo Rivera, the podcast. If this is your first time listening, thank you very much for tuning us in. Every week or so, I'll give you my thoughts, my opinions on the air, on the latest news. There's so much to talk about now in the age of Trump. You can have show notes if you need them. They can be found on my website, geraldo.com. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also follow me on Twitter at Geraldo Rivera. And on Facebook, Geraldo Rivera. All these links are in the show notes. Again, thanks for tuning us in. Here now the show. This is the podcast, our 20th edition. Today is the 30th day of May. Hasn't May just sped by? The weather here in New York has been kind of crummy over the Memorial Day weekend. This is Tuesday. Everybody's back at work, including yours truly. But over the weekend, I was out on the water. Saturday was fine, but Sunday was really a crummy day, very rainy. And yesterday, Memorial Day itself, was also very gloomy. I was out, nevertheless, on Belle, my boat. And I went to meet Erica and some people, believe it or not, the planners of Seoul, who is almost 12 years old. She has her bat mitzvah, you know, the rite of passage in the Jewish faith, next year. So she and her mom, so excited, they met with a couple of party planners. But my point is, I took the boat down. I met them down in Lower Manhattan at the Odeon, the famous old Odeon. It's you remember it from Sex and the City or Seinfeld, very well-established New York landmark. I took my boat down. What was curious is there were police boats and Coast Guard vessels everywhere. Everywhere. Hi, Richard from is that Nepal or Napa? I can't tell. But there were police boats and Coast Guard vessels. Also, a Jersey City vessel was out. The Jersey State Troopers were out. It really was like a flotilla of the various police agencies on the Hudson River yesterday on Memorial Day. Now, there is an aircraft carrier docked temporarily for the celebration because so many service members come into New York City on Memorial Day weekend. So there's an aircraft carrier that's moored right next to the Intrepid, which is permanently moored on 44th Street on the west side. So there's always a lot of security when there's an active Navy warship, bearing in mind what happened to the USS Cole when a small boat in the harbor in Yemen, pulled up to a U.S. destroyer, USS Cole, and blew a hole, almost sunk the damn vessel. So there is right now, I mean, since the Cole disaster in 2000, there has been, you know, enhanced security to keep small boats away from the big vessels, the big ships. So I didn't think much of it. I pulled into North Cove, which is in Lower Manhattan. That's right by the World Trade Center. I moored there, and I walked and got a cab and went to meet Erica and the party planners at the Odeon. Then on the way back, I had to get some gas for Belle, some diesel, actually, for my my old Hinckley. So I drove the boat from North Cove in Lower Manhattan across the Hudson River to Jersey City, Liberty Marina, which is a big fuel dock there. And as I came into the fuel dock, first of all, there were vessels, the police boats, blocking my way. And I kind of stopped, and then I went on the radio, Channel 16, and I radioed the nearest vessel to me and said, "What's up?" And I said, "Can I get fuel?" And I went in. And as I went into the fuel dock, I noticed that the NYPD crack scuba team or diving team was there in the Jersey City Marina, the NYPD cops. So I said, "What's up? What's the big blockade? Is this all for Memorial Day? Is this all because the fleet is in the harbor?" And I expected to find another warship on the Jersey side in the Liberty Marina. And then they told me, no, that it was all about the death the day before on Sunday by a parachute malfunction of a Navy SEAL, a U.S. Navy SEAL, Remington Peters by name, a 27-year-old hero who's a member of the Navy's Leapfrogs parachute team. They do a demonstration every Memorial Day, and it's quite impressive. They do flyovers. You know, it's really when the United States military really shows off some of its might. But this Navy SEAL in a parachute demonstration, his chute apparently malfunctioned or something terrible happened where he maybe wasn't, I don't want to speculate, there's a big investigation going on right now, but maybe he fell out of the harness. I'm not sure exactly what happened, but he fell to his death right there at the mouth of the Hudson River, just, maybe a quarter of a mile from where I was getting fuel. So everybody was obviously very melancholy and bummed out about that, and it's awful. I mean, to lose a hero to an equipment malfunction like that is something that it seems such a waste. A special warfare operator, first class, the kid from Colorado, enlisted in the Navy 2008, a veteran of two combat deployments. And here he is, this 27-year-old. His family noted that he was an angel on earth. So we certainly lament the passing of U.S. Navy SEAL Remington Peters. I mean, his death, and I think now forevermore, when I pass that little harbor there at the entrance to the Liberty Marina, I will think of U.S. Navy SEAL Remington Peters, who tragically fell to his death right there in front of so many thousands of spectators watching. It's just awful. So R.I.P. Remington Peters, our condolences. And you know, while I'm at it, to all of those, I mean, with Memorial Day just having passed, to all of those service members who have given their life for their country. The president went to Arlington yesterday, and I thought his speech was good. I thought the president has been doing very well. I mean, putting aside everything swirling around him, I thought that the 9-day trip to Asia and to Europe was a big success, and I certainly loved hearing the president in the context of real issues rather than talking about fake news or being assailed, this aid or that aid or this or that. I'll get to the president. Let me give you kind of a stream of consciousness what's on my mind right now. Aside from the death, importantly, Remington Peters, I want to talk a little bit about Tiger Woods. Now, I don't really know Tiger Woods. I might have met him. I don't even remember if I did during the height of his fame in the early 2000s. I mean, an impressive and unbelievable story. So many major titles, maybe the greatest golfer ever. And to see him humbled and laid low by his own conduct. I mean, when he lost his marriage and had the problems he had, with the various mistresses coming forward and so forth. When I saw his picture on the front page of the tabloids, the various tabloids, you know, looking all, unkempt and, looked like a mess. He looked totally stoned or wasted or all beat up personally. It just really seemed that he'd really hit an all-time low with drugs or alcohol or women or whatever it was. Plus, he's had all these awful injuries, and maybe the injuries are causing the melancholy that's causing the drug or alcohol use. I don't know. So my first response was, oh, my God, look how far this hero has fallen. And then I started hearing some of the details of the traffic stop that led to his arrest for driving under the influence in Jupiter, Florida. And it turns out that he wasn't actually driving. He was asleep at the wheel of the vehicle parked. I don't think it was stopped in the road. I think it was off on the side of the road. It was properly off the road, but the engine was running and he was asleep with his head on the steering wheel. Given the fact, remembering those headlines, because I'm sure they were in your newspaper also. I'm sure that you saw the same picture I did, either on the local news or the cable news channels like my own Fox News or the front page of whatever the newspaper is in your town. I'm sure you saw that picture, and I'm sure you had the same response I did. But given the humiliation, the destructive humiliation of that, you know, picture, that incident, him being booked for driving under the influence and his picture blasted everywhere as if he were, a mass murderer or a child molester or something. I just wonder if that was necessary. I just wonder if I was the cop who saw this car pulled over on the side. And I noticed that one of you told me, a tennis told me that he had his signal on, his directional signal. Maybe he did. I don't know. But so if you're the cop, you go up to the car and you see who's in the car and you see the person is asleep. What do you do if you're the officer? What would I do if I was the officer? I want to get to that Puerto Rican Day Parade controversy, Frank. Just hang in there. If I was the officer who knocked on the window, probably woke up Tiger Woods, who's a mess, what would I have done? Would I have said, step out of the vehicle and conducted a field sobriety test? Or noting who he was and the fact that he was not driving under the influence, he was parked under the influence. I'm not sure that that's the same crime. Parking under the influence. Is that a clear and present danger to anybody? You know what I might have done? I might have said, hey, Tiger, move over. Call for backup and drive his damn car to the police station. Give him a cup of coffee and find out what's going on. To arrest him for driving under the influence when he was not actually driving and shaming him the way they did, in my opinion, that's cruel, excessive, and unnecessary. I mean, they say that he reacted with arrogance, that the cop responded to Tiger Woods' arrogance. So then I started thinking about Tiger Woods' arrogance. And I just wonder, I mean, I'm not going to go there, but if this was a popular current white guy golfer, would that word with arrogance have still been the way the cop described Tiger Woods? Thank you, Betty. Arrogant. And was the cop so ticked off by Tiger Woods' alleged arrogance? Don't you know who I am? Is that why he savaged him so brutally with this shaming that absolutely crushed Tiger Woods, who again was not driving under the influence, but was parked under the influence? I think that it was very, very unnecessary. He pulled over rather than drive drunk, and isn't that what we teach people to do? He later tested, and they had no alcohol in his bloodstream. No alcohol. Which means that it was some kind of prescription drug. So was it Ambien? Again, remember his last time he got in the gym, it was Ambien, the sleep aid. Was it some other kind of downer or mood altering drug? Prescription drug. I just think that when you consider how brutal that shaming and embarrassment and humiliation was for Tiger Woods, whether he deserved it, I don't think so. I don't think so. Let me just mention about the Puerto Rican Day Parade. Oscar Lopez Rivera, I was the Grand Marshal of the Puerto Rican Day Parade. I remember my dad, Cruz Rivera, one of 17 children, by him on Puerto Rico, my hero. My dad was more proud that day when I was the Grand Marshal of the Puerto Rican Day Parade than almost any time. I mean, he was also proud when I graduated law school and then when I got on television, he was very proud. But when I was the Grand Marshal of the Puerto Rican Day Parade, it was in the 70s, late 70s, maybe early 80s. And I had the top hat and my dad had a matching top hat and we strolled up Fifth Avenue. What a big deal it was. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of our landsmen, our fellow Puerto Ricans on each side of Fifth Avenue, how proud my dad was. It's a big deal to be the Grand Marshal of the Puerto Rican Day Parade in the community. It's a great honor. Oscar Lopez Rivera was a member of the Fuerzas Armadas de Liberación Nacional, the FLAN, F-A-L-N, the Liberation Army, quote-unquote, for fighting the United States of America for the independence of Puerto Rico with violence. They attacked Francis Tavern, the tavern where George Washington addressed the troops, and a really historic, one of the oldest similar establishments in the United States. They attacked, they bombed it, they killed several cops, as I recall, and others. And he went to jail. He was never convicted of anything having to do with violence. I'll say that much for Oscar Lopez Rivera. But he was clearly a member of the conspiracy. He was sentenced to 55 years, and President Obama pardoned him after he had served 35 years. He could have gotten out earlier, but he refused to get out because others were still in prison. So he waited till everybody was pardoned, and then he accepted the pardon. Well and good. He did 35 years. Okay, he did 35 years. And remember, he's never convicted of violence. But then Mark Viveritos, the city council speaker in New York, had the great idea, and I say that facetiously, of honoring Oscar Lopez Rivera, the FALN terrorist, with advocating that he become Grand Marshal of the parade. So he became Grand Marshal of the Puerto Rican Day Parade that's due to happen, I think it's the 11th of June. The 11th of June, the second Sunday in June. How do you do that? How do you honor... Sorry. How do you honor a terrorist? Why do you honor a terrorist? What's the thinking behind it? That he stayed in jail when he didn't have to because others weren't being released? That's fine. That's great. He gets kudos for being a model prisoner. And a noble spirit, or a friend of the people that he was teamed up with. But to give him the Grand Marshalship of the Puerto Rican Day Parade, my sister Sharon joins us. I mean, what are they thinking about? What does he represent, Oscar Lopez Rivera? Exactly. What is it that he has done for the Puerto Rican community? Positive that you would honor him as the Grand Marshal of your parade. What is the sense of that? What is the point of that? What message are you sending to the world? Here is Puerto Rico, bankrupt, population fleeing the island because the economic situation is so dreadful, a plebiscite coming up in scant days on whether the island should remain a commonwealth, which I think is a terrible idea, or become a state, which I think is the great idea, the much better idea, the salvation of the island to become the 51st state, as it should be, rather than a colony of the United States. But Oscar Lopez Rivera for what? To make the families of the victims of this nationalistic violence feel bad? Is that the motive? Freedom fighter, Frank? Really? Frank Rivera says he's a freedom fighter? Freedom from what? Freedom for what? Law and order? Baloney. Freedom fighter. He's not my freedom fighter. My family's still in Puerto Rico. He wasn't fighting for my family. He was an arrogant, violence abettor and aider who sought to kill innocent people. Had nothing to do with the status of Puerto Rico. Nothing to do with the status of Puerto Rico whatsoever. And to name him as the Grand Marshal is an insult. And you wonder why Goya and all the governor and all these other officials and big businesses are pulling out their sponsorship of the Puerto Rican Day Parade. Good for them. They should. If Oscar Lopez Rivera, listen to me, Oscar Lopez Rivera, if you care about the Puerto Rican Day, the Puerto Rican community, if you care about the Puerto Rican community, Oscar Lopez Rivera, you should withdraw your name as the Grand Marshal. You should resign your Grand Marshalhood. Yield it to somebody who has helped the poor or has done something else to create jobs for Puerto Rican people, done something positive. I really believe that if you care, Oscar Lopez Rivera, if you care about the Puerto Rican community, you should withdraw your name right now. Withdraw and let this parade happen. Let people be happy and joyful without this absolutely unnecessary controversy. I think it's really it's an absolute humiliation and a terrible idea. And Melissa Mark Beveridos, the city council speaker, if indeed you were the brilliant mind behind it, then shame on you. Shame on you. A couple of other notes I want to mention. Greg Allman passed, the great deep rocker, a guy who blended urban and southern grit. Greg Allman, I met him when he was married to Cher in the 1970s. He came to my apartment in New York and agreed to do a huge benefit for my charity for the intellectually and emotionally disabled from institutions like Willowbrook. So he got his whole band, the Allman Brothers Band, Dickie Betts, all of them. And he got Charlie Daniels and his whole band. And they did a great concert for me out on Nassau Coliseum in Long Island here in New York. Raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for the charity. I know he had his ups and downs, but he was undeniably one of the great rock icons of all time. A great rocker, and I lament his passing and whatever pain he had. You know, he lost his brother Dwayne early on to a motorcycle accident, but the Allman Brothers and Southern Rock. I'll tell you a quick story how I got into it. Well, actually, Greg introduced me. I forget his manager's name, but the manager had something to do with an obscure politician from Georgia who was the governor of Georgia. Nobody knew him outside of Georgia, named Jimmy Carter. And through Greg Allman, I got involved with Jimmy Carter's campaign. I actually made a speech for Jimmy Carter in 1974. Long, long time ago. But Jimmy Carter went on to become president of the United States. Served just one term, beaten by Ronald Reagan in 1980. But Greg Allman got me into politics a little bit there. Little side story. Great rocker. I saw him a couple of times since then. He used to play the Beacon Theater a lot on Broadway here in Manhattan. It was terrific seeing him, but he was so charitable, so really so compassionate in that way. And he did a major favor for me and for the kids the charity took care of. And I want to send out condolences to his family. Rest in peace, Greg Allman. Good guy. One of the things that happened a few days ago in Egypt was an ISIS attack. An ISIS attack shortly after the attack, the dreadful attack in Manchester at the Ariana Grande concert. They blew up a busload of Coptic Christians, the Christian community in Egypt. About 10% of Egypt is still Christian, although they've been assailed and attacked. So the busload of Coptic Christians was going from one of the big cities to their monastery in the desert, and they attacked them in the western desert of Egypt, and they slaughtered everybody on board. They tried to, anyway. They killed dozens of people on board, including children, for no reason other than the fact that they are Christian. They're in Egypt, the ISIS assailants. So I want you to tell me again why it is that we can't give Christians in the Middle East some preferential treatment when it comes to their refugee status. I understand that we don't want to discriminate based on national origin or religion, refugees coming in. But doesn't it make sense? If you're a Sunni Muslim in Egypt, no one's going to kill you because of your religion. If you're a Coptic Christian in Egypt, you are a target. This is the second attack, massive, mass murdering attack on Christians in Egypt in the last several months. Isn't it logical and compassionate and practical to give people who are either a minority Muslim sect or a member of some other religion, Jewish or Christian, some kind of recognition of the fact that their religion puts a big bullseye on them. I just don't understand. It seems to me that there is an example of political correctness standing in the way of pragmatic life. It is absolutely undeniable that Christians are being targeted in Egypt. Therefore, why isn't it undeniable that Christians in Egypt should get some kind of preference when it comes to refugee status or immigration recognition? It just makes sense to me. It's not that I'm discriminating against Muslims. I love Muslims. I have more Muslim friends than anybody I know who's not a Muslim. But to deny the reality, the harsh reality, that there is a war on Christianity in the Middle East is to deny reality. It's to deny the facts. Why can't immigration policy have something to do with rescuing those who are assailed, those who are being victimized? Doesn't that make sense? A busload of Coptic Christians going to a monastery with children. The bus is attacked, both sides, an ambush by ISIS, people slaughtered, children massacred. And we can't extend a helping hand to the Christian would-be immigrant, would-be refugees, because that would be to discriminate against Muslims or Hindus or Buddhists or whatever it is. I just think that that is. So it's why government is stupid. There's a lot of things that are stupid in government. I just think it's intentional ignorance because of political correctness. And I really lament it. Another thing I lament is watching the haters of Donald Trump target one aide after another, after another, after another. So remember when the story about 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks ago, was Kellyanne Conway's on the on ice. They're giving her the turning their backs on Kellyanne Conway. She's no longer in the in crowd in the Oval Office in the West Wing. Kellyanne's on the outs. Then it was Steve Bannon. Shortly after Saturday Night Live did the great Grim Reaper stuff about Steve Bannon, then Steve Bannon was on the outs. Then it was Rens Priebus. He was on the outs. He wasn't going to be chief of staff anymore. He was going. And then it was Sean Spicer. Remember when after Melissa McCarthy with the great bid on Saturday Night Live? So Sean Spicer was on the outs. And they were saying, well, was Sean Spicer ever give us another briefing or is he finished? And they brought in Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and she was going to be the press secretary. And now it's Jared Kushner. Now it's the son-in-law of Jared Kushner. So it's been a serial attack on Trump aides. Kellyanne Conway, Steve Bannon, Sean Spicer, now Jared Kushner. So Jared Kushner, of course, is the son-in-law, so everyone's saying now they really have Trump by the balls. They really got him now. This is in the inside the family. Now they're close to the president. Now all kinds of hell is going to be reaped on the president because now his son-in-law has been exposed to trying to open a back channel to Russia. What's the crime? I mean, I'm a lawyer. What's the crime? I don't know exactly what collusion. What's the collusion? What crime is collusion? Anyway, you hear the word collusion? Look it up in the statute. What crime is it to collude? What does collude mean? To work secretly with. If Jared Kushner called up some Russian and said, my father-in-law is going to be different to Russia than President Obama was. You know, I don't like that. I don't like, because you have one president at a time. They should have waited until January 20th. He could have called him the minute after President Trump was sworn in. But it's still not a crime. It may be bad taste, but it's not a crime. And this whole Russia thing, when I hear pundits, you know, I always have the three news channels on, you know, 24/7, not 24/7, but whenever I'm in the office, I have the three cable news outfits on because I want to see the different points of view represented. CNN is like a dentist office, the drilling sound. They're constantly after Trump, 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 Trump. They go through the, you know, Kellyanne, Steve Bannon, Sean Spicer, Jared Kushner, what's next, Melania? You know, they go after the kid, Barron. MSNBC has become more, how should I say it? I think MSNBC at least changes the tune once in a while. Like Rachel Maddow is very smart. You know, they're bringing in, I'm glad that Brian Williams has been rehabilitated and they're bringing in, you know, some of the heavyweights from the network, from NBC, big NBC News. MSNBC is looking better. It's still predictably hard left. And Fox is relatively predictably right. I wouldn't say far right because you have people like Chip Smith and, you know, others, me, who are more nuanced. But to see the constant attacks on the president of the United States, it's almost like it reminds me of I was at the home of a very prominent, legendary liberal journalist in 2004. You remember this is the year after the Iraq invasion. We were bogged down in Iraq. It was going terrible. And George W. Bush, Bush 43, was running for re-election. And this prominent journalist, liberal journalist, said to me at a posh dinner party in the Hamptons, "I hope the war goes badly. Because I hate George W. Bush and I want him out of office. I must punch the guy." I swear I wanted to hurt him. He wanted the war to go badly so George W. Bush would lose re-election. It was disgusting to me. It really made me want to vomit. And I feel a little bit about that now. I mean, not as gross as that yet, not as grotesque as that yet, but it's like Donald Trump can't buy a like. It's like anything Donald Trump does on CNN is grist for the mill. MSNBC, grist for the mill. No matter what he does, like he pushed the guy from Montenegro to get in the front of the line. I've been in a lot of those gangbang photo ops. And, you know, there is a pecking order, the star of the movie's in front or the, you know, whoever the principal is and then the correspondents who, you know, have some connection to the cause or more prominent. There's kind of a pecking order in all those gangbang group shots. It was like a day and a half news that they were actually saying that Trump kind of working his way through the crowd and kind of, you know, Trump's a big guy, you know, probably 250, 6'4". He goes past the guy and the guy gets fumbled. The whole thing took like a second. 2 seconds at most. And the guy recovered. He smiled. Trump smiled. And then they went off about how that was symbolic of how America's bullying Europe. I mean, if it was President Obama and the same exact stuff happened, would people react that way? Would they? It is so symbolic. Not of how Donald Trump feels about Europe or Europe feels about Donald Trump, but how the press feels about Donald Trump. To make that a story, with everything else going on about NATO and whether they're going to pay 2% of their gross national product for their own defense and pay their fair share or Sunni, Shiite, this, that, and the other. They're talking about Trump elbowing aside the guy from Montenegro. You know, at a certain point, if he screws up, fine. But the president of the United States, you only get one president. Like if you're complaining about President Trump's people jumping the gun before inauguration, I mean, it's almost the same thing. You got one president at a time. Give him credit once in a while for when he does something well. And it's very hard to look at this trip. Now, I hate Saudi Arabia. I don't want to say I hate Saudi Arabia. I think that that's an overstatement. I detest Saudi Arabia's relationship, secret, informal, person-to-person relationship with Sunni Muslim terrorism. That's what I detest. Saudi Arabia funded, where people from Saudi Arabia funded the majority Saudi Arabian hijackers on 9/11. They funded elements within Saudi Arabia, funded Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra, and most infamously, ISIS. So I don't trust Saudi Arabia, and I think that Sunni extremist violence, that's what happened in Manchester, an ISIS kid does that. I think Iran is getting the short end of the stick. Iran, the Shiite nation, is getting the short end of the stick. But I see it at least as a strategy. Trump goes and he laid out a strategy. He's going to arm Saudi Arabia. He's choosing sides between Saudi Arabia and Iran. He picked Saudi Arabia over Iran. Obama tried to be more nuanced. That's why he made the nuclear deal with Iran. Iran just elected a reformist, re-elected the reformist Rouhani president. But at least Trump laid out a strategy. In Israel, he went and he talked to the Palestinians. He talked to the Israelis. He talked about solving this dilemma. The Israelis could not have been more gushy in their love of him. Netanyahu was practically French kissing the president. I mean, it was amazing. And then he goes to see the Pope. Yeah, the Pope. That's another example. Goes to see the Pope. Melania, the first Catholic in the White House. I think the first Catholic. Maybe Jackie Kennedy. I don't know what religion she was. But there's Melania Trump in the Catholic first family, or at least the first lady Catholic. Go to see the Pope, and the Pope takes a picture, Pope Francis. Doesn't have a lot in common with Donald Trump, obviously. Pope Francis is a man of the people. I love Pope Francis, my politics. But Pope Francis is standing with the first family, and the Pope has got a sour puss on. And Donald Trump is smiling, and Melania's got a more nuanced smile, and I forget who else was in the picture. But the picture was Pope Francis shows his disdain for Donald Trump. That's the story. Pope Francis shows his disdain for Donald Trump by being serious. There's a lot of other shots they could have used of the president and the Pope, with the Pope smiling and Donald Trump smiling and chumming it up, and the Pope giving Melania the consecrated rosaries. They didn't use those. They used Donald Trump smiling and the Pope frowning and said the Pope doesn't like the president. P.S., a couple of days later, Macron, the new French president, goes to meet the Pope. The Pope has the same face on. So maybe it wasn't that the Pope was responding. Maybe the Pope just, that's what he does when he has a group shot. I don't know, but that's like pushing the Montenegrin guy. It's a non-story, a totally non-story. It was, you have to, at some point, I'm going to go back to this point. At some point, you have to root for the president. At some point, you have to root for the United States. You can't be such a hater because the election didn't turn out the way you wanted. Sure, you oppose him politically. And if you want to be one of the resistors, be a resistor. As long as you don't screw around with other people's property or inconvenience other people, you can resist all you want. The main thing you should do is register and vote next time. But at some point, you got to stop looking at Donald Trump and thinking that everything he does, every breath he takes. Bill Maher, you watch Bill Maher or John Oliver or any of these shows, Stephen Colbert, like every joke is an anti-Trump joke. And the other jokes they try to tell fall flat. It's just, I think that you got to give the president a break. You got to root for the president's success. You got to ease off a little bit. And talking about easing off, this is very sensitive what I'm going to talk about now, finally. But it's really been bugging the hell out of me. You know, we here at Fox have gone through a lot since the Roger Ailes controversy last summer. And it was hard losing Roger just a few days ago, our founder. And I said that if Roger had passed a year earlier, he would have been on Mount Rushmore as the founder and creator of Fox News with Rupert Murdoch's partnership, one of the most important people in the history of broadcasting and broadcast journalism. But sadly, the last year of his life was marred by the sex harassment scandal, and Roger was forced out, and he resigned. And then the same thing, in essence, happened to Bill O'Reilly, our highest-rated anchor, you know, both men friends of mine. And I lamented that, and then Bill Shine, who was the co-president after Roger's resignation, he was forced out. So we've been through a lot. But, you know, we have tremendous resilience here at Fox News, and a lot of people dedicated to doing the job. And the vast majority of Fox News not involved in any scandal. But when I saw MoveOn.org or whoever the far-left organizations were begin to attack my friend Sean Hannity, attack him, you know, presumably because of his story, you know, his focus on the Sean Rich story, the kid shot in the back who worked for the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, and they said, you know, the theory was he was killed because he was the source to WikiLeaks. I mean, I don't know if there's any grain of truth in that story, but Sean did the story. I mean, I would not have done it, but Sean did it. He has a total right to do the story. They say, oh, his parents are so bereaved, and, you know, how can you do this? You're being insensitive, you're being obscene, you're being, you know, pornographic, you're being insensitive. How can you do the story about this kid? The fact of the matter is that parents don't get to choose, bereaved parents, God bless them. They don't get to choose whether the news covers the death of their loved one. If it's news, it gets covered. If it's not news, it doesn't get covered. You can argue that this death is not news. A lot of people would argue otherwise. But the fact of the matter is that someone can talk about that murder because there's something called the Bill of Rights. People have the absolute freedom of speech. They have the right to talk about any incident, particularly a crime, if they want to. Maybe their theory about what happened is far-fetched or even nonsensical. They still have the right to talk about it. They still have the right to report it. And what happened was the far left then attacked Sean Hannity and said, he's just like Bill O'Reilly. He's just like Roger Ailes. We've got to boycott Sean Hannity. That's how they got rid of O'Reilly. They boycotted his sponsors or threatened to boycott his sponsors, and the sponsors chickened out, and they left O'Reilly despite the fact he's the highest rated cable show for 15, 16 years. So they tried that same tactic with Sean Hannity. Attack Hannity. Attack his sponsors. Come on, everybody, all you resistors. Direct your rage at the sponsors of Sean Hannity. Force those sponsors, just like you did with Bill O'Reilly, force those sponsors to dump Sean Hannity. So I tweeted a couple of things. Under the hash mark, is that what you say? Hash mark? Stand with Sean. Here's what I said. It's time to fight back against those who believe the First Amendment applies only to their freedom of speech and to the leakers that they favor. I don't like boycotts, but be clear. I will not shop, and I will urge others not to shop or use any sponsor that pulls ads from Sean Hannity. Sean Hannity, and I disagree with him 80% of the time, maybe 70% of the time, but he has the absolute right to say what's on his mind. And people who go after his sponsors deserve to be outed. You cannot have a free society where organized, funded, secret efforts are engineered to drive ideas that you don't agree with off the public airwaves. Sean Hannity is my friend. He has the absolute right to have his opinions. And the fact that he has such an enormous following in radio and television is evidence that there's a lot of people out there who agree with his point of view, however misguided it may be. That's not my issue, whether he is right or wrong. My issue is whether or not he has the right to speak his mind. And just like you do, just like I do, Sean Hannity does. So to moveon.org and George Soros or anyone else who may be funding or engineering this effort, lay off. Lay off. Because this dog can bite. I didn't mean to leave you on that melancholy note. You know I love you. Thank you, Trish Rosales. Thank you, Martin Anthony Jr. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And thank you very much for following. Be sure to listen to the podcast. You can get it on Geraldo.com. That's the best way, Geraldo.com or iTunes. It's free, or on Twitter. It's all free. Gets edited, polished up, put some sound bites in, so it's a little more entertaining than just hearing me rapping. But thanks very much. We'll see you next time.